This broadcast is being brought to you by Covenant Medical Center at 6109 Crenshaw Boulevard in Los Angeles, where they specialize in cardiology, diabetes, hypertension, and pain management. Dr. Donald Winter is your specialist, whose practice is focused on patient care, rehabilitation, and life quality. They can be reached at 323-750-5000 or 323-565-2778. Remember, Covenant Medical Center for excellence in patient care.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good morning. Today is Tuesday, December 20th, 5 shopping days till Christmas. It is a balmy around 25 degrees here in beautiful downtown Dallas, Texas. This is Change Matters Solutions, and I am Kenny Hendricks.
And good morning. I am Colette Williams, and it is a very cool, cold, kind of gray-blue skies here in Los Angeles, California. I am Colette Williams, as I said, and we are going to get started with a very interesting show. As Ken said, we've got five more shopping days before Christmas, and we've got a great deal to talk about, and we've got some things that we're going to let you know that will take place at the beginning of the year. So I'm hoping everyone is warm and comfy and cozy and ready to listen, and be sure to call in. We appreciate your calls. We appreciate your support. So be sure to call in, and to call in, that number is 866-510-9025. And to listen and to talk, press **. Again, that's 866-510-9025 to listen to the show, and hit ** if you'd like to talk to us. And I hope that you do. I hope that you have something to say. Remember, we are Change Matters, and your views are important, and that's what we want to hear. Your views, your news, and you. So give us a call, join into the conversation, let us know what's on your mind, let us know how you think we should proceed this coming year, 2017, and what we can do to make change, and what we can do to mitigate what we're getting ready to go through with that individual
who will be occupying.
I ain't gonna say.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can send us an email at changematters99@gmail.com. changematters99@gmail.com. We're going to go ahead and get started. It is interesting. Apparently, the Electoral College has gone ahead and solidified that this individual is now going to be occupying the White House for the next 4 years. So it's going to be interesting. There are a lot of things going on with regard to how people have reacted to his being elected or selected, as it were. And one of the things that is very disturbing to me is the pretty much the rise again of white supremacists. You've got the alt-right, you've got...
Oh my God, yes.
More examples of...
Oh my God, they're coming, they're just everywhere. They're in the pews, the KK, oh my goodness.
And of course, his putting Steve Bannon, the guy from Breitbart, in his cabinet. I mean, that is so absolutely ridiculous. This guy is a diehard far-right extremist. Breitbart, if you know anything about Breitbart, Breitbart was a big time, he's a guy that died early in his 40s a few years ago, but he started Breitbart.com, and it was this anti-Obama, anti-anything liberal or progressive, very far right wing, just completely off the charts in terms of being on the far right. And this guy, Steve Bannon, is his successor, and he's no better. These guys were big time birthers, would not accept, even after Obama revealed his birth certificate, still didn't believe it. They've got all sorts of things, and this is what he's putting in there. So we have some work to do in terms of making sure that we are, frankly, we're protecting ourselves, because these people.
Right. And the other he put in there, I don't remember the guy's name, but he is an owner of a football team. And he's now the secretary of, I couldn't even look at it.
He's going to be selecting like the CEO of ExxonMobil.
Yep, he did that. Mm-hmm. And the owner of a sports franchise. Really? The owner of a sports franchise. And he put him in a cabinet position, secretary of something. Wow.
And he's
just picking people with
putting Rick Perry in charge of, what is it, the EPA, the agency that Rick Perry do away with?
How in the world? The man doesn't even know. The people that he put in these places don't really know anything about the job that they're getting, that they've been handed. They don't know anything about it. He's just going around the room, eeny, meeny, miny, moe.
He puts Ben Carson in charge of HUD. And Ben Carson, just what, less than a month ago, would not accept the job of rewriting
because
Obama.
He didn't know enough.
Yeah, because he didn't
and
have
he thinks he,
political
right.
experience.
He didn't have the experience, right.
Yeah.
And now he's got the experience to run HUD. Well, he lived in the projects when he was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
So that qualifies him.
Mm-hmm. Now, none of these people have been confirmed, so they've all got to go through confirmation. So actually, it's going to be interesting, because I'm going to see what kind of cojones these Democrats have. You know, not 6 months ago, John McCain and two other lawmakers, who I can't recall, jumped up and said that they would block every Supreme Court nominee for the next four years if Hillary was elected. And the fact that no Democrat has said that yet shows me that they don't have any backbone. Now, if they start confirming these people without a fight, you know, I'm done with them. I'm completely done with them.
I am too.
I watched the Republicans these last pretty much 8 years get mad at the Republican Party and start branching off and talking about doing things. I feel like I'm in the same that position right now. These people will not fight. They just want to go with the status quo. You know, they always want to take the high ground when the Republicans they are getting down in the dirt. You know,
and they don't mind getting down in the dirt. And the Dems just sit and look and watch and wait.
You cannot take a knife to a gunfight. You know, and that's
a butter knife at that.
Yeah.
So what is it that makes the Dems so immobile? They become immobile and don't want to do anything. What is the reason for that?
Right now,
that just doesn't make any sense.
They need to be groomed.
And not to stand up, and not to take a position and just sit and talk and wait. What does that say about the Dems? There is no strength in the Democratic Party.
They need to be grooming someone for 2020. They need to be finding that person, that dynamic.
Right now. right now.
Mobilize the base. The problem, one of the biggest problems, I think, is Hillary is not a dynamic speaker. She's a wonk. She is, you know, she understands what's going on in terms of the politics, but she just does not know how to relate to people. And I think that was the biggest problem. And conversely, all Trump could do is relate to people. He has no idea of anything else, but all he could do was relate to these far right people who wanted change because they couldn't handle this black man being in the office for 8 years. Yeah, and I did see that Obama's trying to prevent Keith Ellison from becoming the new DNC chair. He's trying to get this guy Perez installed DNC chair. That's going to be interesting as well.
Well, all of it's going to be interesting. And I'm really surprised at what has just happened. The recent events are just astounding. And it amazes me that people think that it's okay to put somebody in that house like him. That I can't even wrap my brain around people would think that that is okay. He's done everything he can or possibly could have done to say, don't do it.
Well,
he doesn't want to be there.
I think it's time to start really talking about, you know, what we the people can do. You know, for example, in exposing these people and, you know, for example, and Scotty, our producer and engineer, is a North Carolina resident. And Scotty, a North Carolina, the outgoing governor, and Scotty, you can tell me if it passed or not. I believe it passed.
Yes.
Outgoing governor signed a bill strictly, very strongly limiting the power of the incoming Democrat.
Yes, that is correct. Pat McCrory, the Republican outgoing governor of North Carolina, signed it into law. The legislature is still in Republican hands. They still have majorities in both houses. And so they pushed this bill during this emergency session for hurricane relief, Hurricane Matthew relief. And they passed this bill that's going to strip him, the incoming governor, what's his name? Attorney General Roy Cooper, stripping him of his appointment powers of you know, these different boards and things of that nature. And I mean, it's just I'm telling you, these Republicans here in the state of North Carolina, it ain't nothing like them in the country. It ain't nothing like them.
It's the same thing. If you look at it, if you really look at it, the outgoing guy is stripping the incoming guy of power.
Right.
At federal level, you know, the Republicans didn't want to give Obama the power to appoint another Supreme Court justice or wait for the next person to come in. You know,
right.
So it's really the same sort of thing.
It's worse here. I mean, here they pass laws to prevent.
It's all part of the same animal. They want to change the rules.
Right.
You know, when they're not in.
Right.
And when they get in, then they want to change the rules again.
Well, our Constitution.
Changing the rules impacts them. They benefit more than anyone else. When the rules change, they only do that to ensure their own benefit. It's not for everybody else. They could care less about other people, the people of this country.
Well, we have a solution. We have a solution. This change matters solution. This is the solution that I propose to Governor-elect Roy Cooper. I think it's either Section 3 or Section 4 of the North Carolina Constitution says that all power rests in the people and that we can choose to abolish our government at any time we want to. Now, so a majority of North Carolinians wanted Pat McCrory out. So that meant a lot of Republicans had to vote for Roy Cooper to get him out. So what the Republican, all those people, regardless of party affiliation, who voted Pat McCrory out, we should get behind Roy Cooper and tell him to invoke the Constitution. And let's get rid of these Republicans who stripped you of all your power using our constitutional measures and then hold all new elections. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do.
Here's an example, Colette. Here's an example. Before the laws, McCrory, who's the outgoing Republican, could appoint a total of up to 66 trustees to the board of 17 UNC system schools. These trustees are responsible for making decisions regarding the university's mission, strategies, and finances. They're a key part of McCrory's influence over thousands of teachers, researchers, and students. After the law has passed, Cooper will be stripped of all of those appointments, leaving him with zero.
Wow.
So that gives you an example. This guy, McCrory, had the power to appoint 66. Cooper cannot appoint a single one. So that's just an example on the CNN website. They're talking about things before the law and after law. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here in Dallas, probably 15 years ago, we the brother that was the mayor, Ron Kirk.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There was a woman who was on the board, and the mayor here doesn't really run the city. The city council does. But Ron Kirk was the mayor, and the woman's name escapes me right now. But she was very contentious, always fighting, hated Ron Kirk. They was always at each other's throat. She was elected after Ron. As a matter of fact, it was...
I vaguely remember her.
8 years ago, because I believe it was... maybe it was only... At any rate. But as soon as she was elected mayor, her first order of business was to give power back to the mayor. Now, it didn't work. She didn't get it. She only lasted one term. But so when she was on the city council, she didn't want the mayor to have more power. But as soon as she became mayor, she wanted the mayor to have more power.
Exactly. So as I said, they change the rules and bend the rules so that they are the one to benefit. They benefit by that. It's not the people. They do that for themselves. They have to benefit. So changing the rules works only for themselves.
Here's one.
That's
more.
It.
In North Carolina, McCrory had the ability to appoint 1,500 people to exempt positions. These kinds of positions allow the governor to hire or fire employees at will. These employees could work in the governor's office or other agencies like the state's health and transportation departments. After it was passed, Cooper will only be able to appoint 425 people to exempt positions. Down from 15 to 420. On its face.
Mm-hmm.
On its face, how do you accept that? You know, even if you're a Republican, I mean, it was someone with any sense of decency. How do you accept that?
Because they're not thinking of decency.
Well, that's why I said more Republicans voted. I mean, this was a bipartisan effort to get McCrory out. Democrats couldn't do it by themselves. People who vote Democrats couldn't do it by themselves because, remember, Donald Trump carried North Carolina for the Electoral College. So that meant that a whole lot of Republicans in the state did not want McCrory, and they defected and voted for Roy Cooper. So if all those people lay aside their party labels and all this and they agree that McCrory's been bad for North Carolina, then y'all need to come together. We need to come together here in the state, and we need to throw these bombs out using the constitutional powers. It goes to what both of you were saying about when the Republicans were in there with Obama, they wouldn't let him do this, they blocked this, they blocked that. They'd use every little dirty trick. So, okay, let's do the same. Let's do the same. Even though these wouldn't be dirty tricks, it would just be a response to their dirty trick by using the Constitution to abolish the government, and mm-hmm. we'll keep Roy Cooper, and then we will hold new elections for the state for the House and the Senate. That's what I would do. That's what I would be calling for if I was Roy Cooper.
Right.
Well,
it's
the same thing at the federal level.
Those things are done, everybody needs to take a position. Well, if they can do that and it benefits only those who've made the change or the one person that made the change, everybody needs to take the position, we're going to do the same. We are going to do the same.
You know,
everybody in the state needs to take the position that they're going to do the same to make the change that benefits the citizens.
You know who actually was a very good fighter? I hate to say this, for the Democrats, guy out of New York. Now, don't laugh when I say this. Anthony Weiner.
Oh!
I know. He was actually a fighter. If you ever watched him on the floor of the Senate, he would stand...
I vaguely remember that. Really? But really? He doesn't have good sense.
No, he doesn't. No.
He does not have good sense. And usually those are the ones who are good fighters.
Yeah.
The ones that don't have good sense. Go in and start stalking folks.
We need more people that were willing to fight like that. Or, you know, people about another party on the left. I don't know that that's going to work unless you start now. You can't start when the campaign starts. You have to start now. And you've got to...
And we watch all of these things on the news daily. We listen to the shows. We listen to the reporters, the pundits. We read the newspaper. We get all these things. Where do we go? What do we do? How do we change the things that happen that we know are not to benefit the community, especially Black folks? I don't see Black folks benefiting by any of the recent activity. Not one. And those folks that think that they will benefit, I could just sock Omarosa in her forehead. I've only seen her one time. And I'm sure she thought she was going to get...
She's an opportunist.
She's simply an opportunist. And she told me that she and that piece of a person are very good friends. Oh yeah, he supports me a great deal. Really? And she thinks that's a wonderful thing. She and Ben Carson, both of them need to be socked in the forehead. But how in the world, how do we get to a place where we can take care of ourselves? And that is a lofty, lofty, lofty idea. It's self-determination. We have got to be determined to take care of ourselves, because this that's coming up, oh my God, I know one person who has to be at the inauguration. I know one person who's got to be there. Please, those of you who are listening, do not watch the inauguration. I know you're not going. Do not watch the inauguration. Turn your television off. If you're tempted to watch it, turn your television off. Do not watch the inauguration. That is not for us. This is not the same kind of inauguration we witnessed 4 years ago.
Or 8 years ago. And folks, if you're on the line, if you wanted to join in, make sure you hit ** on your phone. And that dial-in line again is 866-510-9025. 866-510-9025. And if you're listening and you want to join in, go ahead and hit ** and let us know what you're thinking about all we're talking about. Again, we've got an interesting 4 years coming up. Democrats...
That everybody is a part of. Everybody's involved, whether you know it or not. Everybody's involved in this. And we need to understand, I just read something and I also saw something, that there's a resurgence of the KKK. They haven't gone anywhere, but they're now out front and center, because they know they have someone who backs them.
There was a guy, I guess it must have been about a month or so, maybe 2 months ago, I read, he was running through the streets. He and a friend were riding around in their truck, and one guy was getting out, running up to people's cars, Black people's cars, minorities' cars, yelling Trump and things like that. And see, and I keep talking about this, people need to be able to protect themselves. We have Second Amendment rights. You need to exercise your Second Amendment rights. If you're over 21 with no felonies, you need to be arming yourself. And you need to, and I tell you, and I think I told you this, Colette, a few weeks ago, I was at the gun range, and my heart was warm, very warm, to see at least half the people at the gun range were Black. Mm-hmm. And it was mainly black couples and some with their kids teaching their kids how to say
right. And we have to be, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we also have to not only be vigilant and take up, I hate to say take up arms, but we have to protect ourselves. But the other thing is, please don't just think that we are recommending arm yourself for fun, recreation. If you go to the range, that's fine. But we're talking about preparing yourselves for what could possibly come. And we're not talking about just
the fun
randomly.
And recreation helps to prepare you. Going to the range,
yeah.
Understanding gun safety, understanding how to use it and when to use it. You know, those things, when people grew up around guns, they have a very different mindset about guns. They're mm-hmm. not afraid of guns. They don't see them as the enemy. People hunt, people sport shoot, and guns are part of their everyday lives. And when SHTF stuff hits the fan, you know, they're prepared. You know, and some people are prepared and some people aren't. And we as a people are getting better at it, but we need to be better prepared. You know, just the fact of the matter is, we have the Second Amendment rights. Our forefathers did not have those rights. Can you imagine our grandfather running around with a gun? You know, he'd have been lynched.
Right.
Now
they were lynched anyway.
And they're lynched. They're kind of lynching here. What's his name up in Minnesota? You know, so you have to be careful about that. And when you carry, you have to be very careful. You know, because people are not used to it, and people see black people as being the bad guy. There was a guy a couple of years ago. He was going into Walmart, and when he got out of his truck, somebody saw that he had a concealed weapon. And when he got into the store, the white guy ran over and said, "He's got a gun," and tackled him. You know, he's lucky it wasn't me, because I would have shot him. And he'd have been in, because the guy was probably, I think he said it was like 60, and the guy that tackled him was like in his 40s. You know, and so you've got a right if somebody attacks you and you are a legal concealed carry
right
carrier, you are well within your right to shoot that person.
Oh my God.
Right. You know, and so, you know, you have to be aware of those things. It's not just go out, run out, buy a gun and, you know, act like,
no, it isn't, no,
you know, paladin or something like that. You've got to be trained, you've got to go to the range, you've got to understand what you're doing. You know, but I think we need to carry more. I think more black people need to get out there, get to the range. I see more black people at the gun shows now. When I first started going into gun shows, I'd see 1, 2, 3. Then over the years, then I'd see more and more. And now we're not even 25% yet, but I'm constantly seeing black people. It's like, you know, everywhere I look, there's somebody. At least one person.
Right.
You know, I saw one brother walking around with an AR-15. About 15 minutes later, I saw him later. He had two AR-15s strapped to him.
And, wow.
And it looks like we're at the bottom of the hour. We're at the bottom of the hour. But go ahead and take a break. But make sure you stay with us. We're going to be right back after a short commercial break. This is Change Matters Solutions. Stay with us.
Stay with us.
Podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
And we are back. We are Change Matters Solutions. I'm Kenny Hendricks.
And I am Colette Williams here in brisk, cold, sunny Southern California. We're going to continue our discussion on the recent events here in this country and what we feel we should be doing and how we've got to change the plight for black people. And the other thing that I wanted to mention is that we're in a time when our options are few. And preparing ourselves for what's to come is the very first thing that we should think about. And along with that is, how can we change? How can we get ourselves to in a position where we're not on the bottom? We're not on the bottom, and we're allowing things to just happen, whether it benefits us or not. And we know with this new so-called administration, and we know it's not an administration, it's just a joke, what should we do? What can we do to help ourselves? Because we've got to stop waiting for them to assist us, help us, tell us what to do, and for permission to do anything. So we should be in a position where we're doing for ourselves and we don't rely on anyone else.
Exactly.
Stop waiting for permission.
Back to the gun situation. This is, and I sent this out from the our Gmail a couple of weeks ago. This is from Dred Scott. Free people own guns. Slaves don't. If black people were entitled to the privileges and immunities of citizens, it would exempt them from the operation of the special laws and from the police regulations, which southern states consider to be necessary for their own safety. It would give the persons of the Negro race who were recognized in any one state of the Union the full liberty of speech in public and in private upon all subjects upon which its own citizens might speak, to hold public meetings upon political affairs, and to keep and carry arms wherever they want. And all of this would be done in the face of the subject race of the same color, both free and slaves, inevitably producing discontent and insubordination from them and endangering the peace and safety of the state. So, and this is, just goes without saying, the deliberate action to keep black people from owning guns, just like it was deliberate, the deliberate actions to keep people from voting, black people from voting, the deliberate to keep black people from reading, from being educated.
Right.
You know, they won't let you become educated, and then they call you ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
They hire you for a job, and then they call you lazy. Okay, and the same people that say live free or die, give me liberty or give me death, are the people that were enslaving people.
Right. Mm-hmm. Very same. That's right.
So my point is, wake up and voting.
Wake up and get up.
And owning a way to protect yourself and your family.
Right.
In many countries, people cannot do that. So I think we are remiss in our communities that we don't do that. And we need to fix that. It's part of self-sufficiency, self-determination. If I'm self-determined, I can protect myself. I don't need to call my
Absolutely. Right.
You know.
Right.
And you know, as we talk about it, you know, we're very concerned about the implications of this new administration, but for the most part, from on a day-to-day basis, you know, no matter who's president, you still have to be determined to do things for yourself. And we have to stop
waiting
to this being at the bottom.
Right. We have to stop waiting. We have to stop, get rid of that idea of you wait and see. Wait and see. Is this going to work for us, or is it going to be any good? What are we going to get out of it? It's the very same thing that some folks, some black folks especially, said, what did President Obama do for us? What did he do for me? He didn't do anything.
He became president.
Want him to do?
He became president. That's what he did for you.
He became president. That's not enough. You think he's supposed to specifically pick you out of the group and say, this is what I'm going to do for black people? Really? Why and when?
Can I answer that? Because I have a
Absolutely,
different perspective.
Scotty.
What was the point of us voting for a president if all we was going to have was a White House lawn jockey? Because that's basically all we got.
I don't agree that he was a White House lawn jockey. My point is that even if he were the worst president ever, which he is not, I would vote for him. Our kids are growing up knowing that they can become president.
But this is the thing, though. This is what I'm hearing from you, Colette. You're saying that just being black is reason enough for a person, for us to vote for a person. And other people don't operate that way.
No. That's not what I'm saying.
Well, I misunderstood.
Had he been a moron?
Like Ben Carson?
And he's not. I'm saying we finally have someone who is of great stature. He's a man of integrity.
I disagree with you on that, but hey, that's for another time.
It's okay. You can. Yeah. So all I'm saying, the night after the election, that night of the election, once it was all said and done, I called my brother-in-law. I was already in Dallas. I called every male person I knew. When you go to work tomorrow, you wear a suit. You wear a suit and tie. When you get up in the morning, you pat yourself on the back, you look in the mirror with dignity, and you walk out of that door with dignity. You hold your head high. You wear a suit tomorrow.
Because of Barack Obama?
Excuse me?
And we should be, I mean, that's like, we weren't doing those things before he became CEO of USA Inc.
That's right. We weren't doing those things.
We were doing those things.
Why are you saying that? We should have done those things.
We were doing those things.
Say that again, Scotty.
I said that black people did not just start wearing suits or become professionals because of Barack Obama. We were doing all those things before he came into power.
But see, my point is, again, Barack Obama, well-educated, you know, Harvard Law School, he was a constitutional law professor, you know, his wife is the most highly educated first lady we've ever had. These are people, like Colette said, of stature, people who are the type of people you want to have as your president.
Right.
Okay. And, yeah, voting for someone who's black just because they're black, sure, yeah. I don't see a problem with that because guess what? White folks vote for white because I guarantee
vote for white folks white just because they're vote. White?
Yeah, half the white
but
folks.
But all those white folks
Yeah, but white folks get something out of it.
Yeah, but I don't do things because white people do things.
And if until.
Black people didn't get anything out of Obama.
Yes, we did get something out of it. We got a black president. Now, our kids are growing.
What did black people get out of it?
What did you want him to do for you?
Can I answer that?
Sure, please.
Well, he did something for the homosexual group. He did something for the illegal immigrant group. He did something
and you know
for
what?
The various...
And you know what?
I'm not even finished, but go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was getting excited. Go ahead.
As a black man, he did things for other specific groups, but he never did anything to specifically cater to the African-American community. You have young black men, young black sisters, young black children that are being gunned down in the streets, and this man could not even gather up enough testicular fortitude to come out and speak out against it. He'd rather call Kanye West a thug than call the white officers that are gunning our youth down in the street. The man has his priorities mixed up, and for anybody to fail to acknowledge and recognize that by saying that we should be happy that he's the first black president and we should go wear a suit. I mean, this is old. I'm a young black student union president of the college I go to at San Francisco State, and this is the problem with these old school, old civil rights activists. You know what I'm saying? You got this old generational mindset where, because Barack Obama became the president, we need to come up the next day and wear a suit. A Eurocentric garb suit to look like the European. You were just talking about how we need to change things. The first thing that the African American do is we need to pull out of everything Eurocentric. That means wearing European suits to cater to Europeans in their jobs.
You don't have to wear a European suit, but you certainly need to pull your pants up. You certainly need to pull your pants up.
You sound like a civil rights. I don't even wear my pants sagging. But that you felt like that.
I'm not saying you do.
Because I'm a young person.
I'm not saying you do. But you certainly need to.
The first thing that you said. See what I'm saying?
It is the first thing I said. Because I know people who have been shot because their pants have been. Go ahead.
And I told you that I'm the president of the Black Student Union at San Francisco
State
University.
And I am so glad to hear that. I'm so glad to hear that.
And the first thing you said to me is you need to pull your pants up. Do you understand what this
she wasn't talking.
Is
Do you understand that?
I'm not, don't take it personal, honey, because I'm not talking directly to you about your pants. I don't know who you are. So I don't know where your pants are. I'm talking about young black boys in general. That's what I'm talking about. Don't take it personal. It's not meant to offend you.
And I apologize because I did take it personal.
It ain't personal, honey. It ain't personal.
And I apologize for taking it personal. But with me dealing with young brothers and sisters on a consistent basis, this is what they deal with. This is what they come back
with. And you know what? And I deal
with
them on a consistent basis, too. I deal with them on a consistent basis, too, also. And I'm looking at losing students. I'm looking at losing friends of friends. I'm looking at losing a whole lot of folks. There are a lot of things that we have to change. But we have to start somewhere.
You're right.
We've got to start somewhere.
Malcolm X.
I'm so glad to hear that you're at San Francisco State. I'm in Southern California. You're up there in the north. People have talked about the two dividing become separate states for the longest. You're at San Francisco State. Well, guess what? It's time to make a change even there. You're at San Francisco State. You're not at a black college. Why aren't you at a black college?
What? That is the most ridiculous. Okay, I'll answer
you
that.
You can say
I'll
that, but you know what?
Okay,
how can that be
can
ridiculous?
I'll answer that.
Go ahead.
You. Okay. First of all, I'm from Alabama. I'm from the South, the dirty, dirty South, where ain't nothing but black people. All of us own guns, and we don't go to no gun range because we got property. Second of all, both of my parents were in the military. So my whole life, I pretty much spent moving all around this country and outside of that country. When my parents got out from the military, we moved back to Alabama, and that's where I graduated from high school. But me personally, I had grew up pretty much in the South and in other places, and I wanted to find out who I was as a young black male. I wanted to get outside of my comfort zone from around my aunties and around my sisters and around my grandmother to find out who I was and what I was really capable of as a man. So I saved up my money and bought a Greyhound bus ticket and rode 3 days by myself to California, a place that I've never been, to start my future, to start my destiny, to further my education. And that's what I'm doing. So I'm out here getting my degrees so that I can take the knowledge that I have from California back to the South.
And that's
why I'm out here.
We do have another.
And I applaud you for that. And I applaud you for that. And so my point to asking that question.
We have another caller at 754 down in Pompano Beach, Florida. Caller, your question or comment? Do we have a caller?
Hello.
One second. I'm sorry. Hello.
Are you there, caller?
Yes, how you doing? I have myself on mute. I apologize.
Okay.
How you guys doing this morning?
Good. We're doing good, brother. How you doing?
I'm invigorated now. I'm loving the liveliness. How you doing, Scotty?
I
like this because this ultimately is what's going to bring us out of it. I think disagreements where we can.
It's conversation. You know, it's conversation.
Exactly.
It's conversation.
Disagreements inside conversation that we can talk about and solve it. But I just wanted to speak on the first topic that you guys started on about Obama and about, because I heard the same thing. I'm kind of the 180 from the brother that's speaking. I didn't catch your name, sorry, brother. But I'm kind of the 180. I've been to prison 3 times. I wear my pants low. You know what I mean? I don't wear a suit. I often keep my hair unruly. I've sold everything from up and down the East Coast. I've done a lot of what would be viewed as illegal things. I've done some bad things, but I do understand what's going on. I do see that I'm in this spot. I perpetuated it once I got old enough and made my own decision. But I was born just in a bad state all the way around. From abuse to other things, but my thing about Obama is, I was put here. You know what I mean? I didn't have a choice in growing up where gunshots and drugs being sold and things like that. Not because my parents was bad, not because my grandparents couldn't handle money or anything like that. Our government, my your government, my government, where we live at right now, they did that to us. So my thing was, if Obama is president, this is what my mind says. It's been white presidents that I knew of at the time. It's always been white presidents. It's always been bad for me. Somebody with my skin color get in. If the government did it to me, he's the head of the government, maybe he can start undoing some of these things that they did to me. And that's just plain, flat out, plain and simple. But what I've seen in 8 years, and I'm just being real, I watched him. I don't care if he gave the order or not. I watched him be comfortable with it. Just going there and eradicating people in Libya. And I don't care what nobody say about Muammar Gaddafi. I love that man. I cared about that man because of what he was doing, paying attention to what he was doing. Everybody got bad side. Everybody do bad things. He was doing good things as well. And you're going there, you comfortable with that? To me, that, along with a list of other things, to me, that speaks into he just had a hand up his behind. He was just a figurehead, and he was supposed to do something for us, but he didn't. And that's just flat out just how I feel. I don't care about wearing a suit because he became president. So what? I had to wear a suit before to get turned out for 30 jobs because I'm a senator.
Damn right.
You know what I mean? What did a suit, do for me? Nothing. I'm wearing a suit because he's a president.
You know what?
Let me say this. You know, a president is, for the most part, is a figurehead. Okay.
Right.
For a lot of things. You know, there are a lot of things that go on in government that you and I and everybody else on this phone are not going to know about, particularly when it comes to foreign policy and things like that, why these things happen. You know, George Bush lied to us about 9/11. There's a lot of stuff that goes on, you know, that we will never be privy to. You know, but again, I go back to my point about Barack Obama being president. Again, I do it all over again. The fact of the matter, first of all, he's not going to undo 200 years of oppression in 8 years.
Then nobody said, can he do one thing?
But wait a minute.
Can he do one thing for us?
Wait a minute. He's not going to undo it, you know. Okay, he's got to do some things. In my estimation, the fact that he was there, an intelligent, well-educated, Ivy League-educated man was there in the first place, is enough to vote for him. Because guess what?
Why?
I'm going to tell you, why. Because I'm 62 years old, okay?
Okay.
For the first 50-something years of my life.
And we're the ones that he was talking about. Us, who were the civil rights people.
Y'all are the reason things
are wrong. Okay.
Let me say,
it's too much crosstalk. Hello, guys, listen, it's too much crosstalk. We can't hear anything that anybody's saying when more than one person is talking.
You know, the fact that we've had a black president, we've had black mayors, we've had black governors, name a job in this country outside of vice president or speaker of the house that a black man hasn't had, black person hasn't had.
So your point is that all these black faces in high places ain't done nothing to roll back racism. That's what I'm hearing. And this is, I'm agreeing with CN down there in Florida. We do need to have this conversation because there is a generational divide. There's a generational.
We need to have the conversation. And not only do we need to have the conversation, we have to learn from both sides.
But it doesn't seem possible, though, when we're...
San Francisco State. What was that?
I said it doesn't seem possible when nobody wants to acknowledge the other people's view. Y'all say, now I could see voting for President Obama the first go around. He had a great message of hope and change. Let's give him a chance. Let's vote for him. Let's get him in there and see what he's going to do. Now
man had to fight everybody, including black folks.
Listen, he ain't had to fight no black folks. Why are you saying that? He did not have to fight no black folks. On what? What did he have to fight black folks on?
Oh, so Tavis Smiley and Cornel West didn't go around the country to talk about how wrong he was and how much
that ain't what they went around and said. They went around doing what they were supposed to do as advocates of the black community. Why did anybody have a problem with Tavis Smiley and Cornel West advocating for poor people and treating Barack Obama just like they would treat Clinton or anybody? That's the president. That ain't your buddy. That ain't your friend. You're being confused by his skin color.
They are not, buddy. They're not friends. So, again, no one has been able to say what they wanted the president to do specifically.
Well, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you what I want him to do, what I wanted him to do. It's too late now. I wanted him, being a constitutional lawyer and knowing that slavery was not abolished by the 13th Amendment, we, the abolitionist community, was pushing for...
So how many folks sent him letters? How many folks went to Washington, D.C.? How many folks said, you need to come here and have a talk with us?
I was trying to answer your question. You asked me a question. You said, what did we want?
Okay, go ahead, Scotty. I'm sorry.
We wanted him, the abolitionist community wanted him to push to remove the exception clause from the 13th Amendment and stop calling this mass incarceration when it's a continuation of slavery. But what did he do? He upheld the myth. He presided over a 150th anniversary party in Washington, D.C., commemorating the 13th Amendment, when he knows, as a constitutional lawyer, we got video of him telling students that slavery wasn't abolished. Lincoln did not abolish slavery. This man knows that. I wanted him to end private prisons and jails in this country, something he won't do. I wanted him to stop, to remove cannabis from the DEA scheduled list of drugs. Stop locking up people over cannabis, over marijuana, when over half the states they have legalized it. He wouldn't do it, even though it's in his power. So it's a lot of things we wanted him to do that he wouldn't do.
There's a lot of things that we want every president to do that they don't.
Okay, but wait a minute. Hold on. Listen, do you know that he just signed into law the clemency for what is it? 541 or 241?
Okay, but there are over a million people in prison.
At one time, they all get clemency. They're all out. Bill O'Reilly had derogatory, nasty, negative things to say about President Obama on Thursday. And two people on a radio station here talked about Bill O'Reilly making statements about the president because the president was going to sign this. And one of the announcers said, I like what he said. It gave me food for thought. And I wanted to jump through the radio and slap him, but his co-host slapped him for me. Because what Bill O'Reilly said was so absolutely derogatory and negative.
But Colette, that's our problem. We let white crackers push our buttons. We let Bill O'Reilly and these people in media push our buttons. Then we get emotional and we want to slap people.
Well, can I say something? I mean, I want to go back to what the conversation was when I first chimed in, and you guys were talking about guns and protecting ourselves, and we should be going out as groups and, you know, arming ourselves, going to the gun range and putting ourselves in positions to where we can protect ourselves. I'm trying to draw a bridge here. When we were talking about the generation divide that we had, the young generation versus the old generation, and I said before that the old generation, this old civil rights generation, is a large portion of the reason why we're in the situation we're in now, because a lot of the things that they were doing in the past, this marching and, you know, we want to be equal, and they were marching to kind of end institutional racism. So as opposed to really slapping down white supremacy once and for all, we kind of played this game and thought that we would be able to vote our way into equality. So now, you know, back when y'all were marching and with signs and all this type of stuff, now y'all are talking about, oh, we should arm ourselves, and oh, we should go to the gun range. Why the hell are y'all talking about that?
We were talking about it back then.
But y'all wasn't acting on it.
Yes, we were.
But you wasn't acting on it. Well, this is what's happening. This is,
yeah, caller for 415.
Yes, I heard of the Black Panthers, and I'm actually really close friends with one of the founding members of the Black Panthers, Eldridge Big Man. So what I want
to
say
is... So you mean to tell me the people that lost their lives... That lost their lives then? That was all in vain?
Are you serious? Have you heard of the Civil Rights Movement?
Because it was fun and games? Really?
No. They didn't do it because it was fun and fun and games, but it was not a armed rebellion against the powers that be. It was a non-violent coalesced.
Yes, it was a non-violent protest. Okay, yes, it was. The violence was against them.
Right. And have you heard of the book Negroes with Guns by Robert F. Williams? Have you heard of the book I'm going to tell you why. Have you heard of the book This Nonviolent Stuff Will Get You Killed by Charles Cobb?
Yes, I know that one. Yep.
Okay, so we fundamentally understand that there was a flaw made in the civil rights movement. There was a flaw made. And now we are paying, our young brothers and sisters are paying heavily because we were not
properly. We're all paying heavily.
I'm not sure where he's going with it. And we only got about a minute left, and we've got to go ahead and we're at the top of the hour. But we'll go ahead and give me a closing statement, then we're going to close. Give me about 30 seconds.
Okay. No, I just want to thank y'all for allowing me to speak my piece online. My name is Damien Square.
You've got to come
Square.
Back to this show, honey. You've got to come back to this show, please.
Call it. We need
I'm gonna start my own YouTube channel soon. But my name is Damien Square, DamionSquare, just like the shade. You can look me up on Facebook. I got a lot of the stuff that I do on there. But I would like to say this is all black love, and this is something that really needs to happen. The young generation needs to come in,
absolutely,
and the old generation
absolutely
needs to come in, and we need to talk this out. And the old generation, we need to be utilizing y'all's wisdom and y'all's guidance.
Thank
and
you.
We need to be combining that with the youth's energy and unwillingness to compromise with white supremacy, and we will not be able to be defeated. And we also
absolutely
need to establish some international allies.
We're going to look on YouTube. That's just Damien Square. We're going to look at
Facebook.
You ain't square.
You
real hip, all right?
Damien Square on Facebook. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, listen.
Damien, be sure to call us. Be sure to call us.
I most definitely will. Thank you.
All right. And thank you, then.
Okay, thank you so much. And Ken. Right.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. Before we go, this is the Christmas show, and I wanted to say something really, really quickly. But we have in our family two people that we have to acknowledge during this season. One is Jackie Towne, who had a heart transplant on January 19th of 2014, and Oscar Haley, who had a kidney transplant August 20th of 2016. They are the first
brother
and sister. Excuse me?
They're brothers and sisters.
They're brothers and sisters. Their mother is the first mother in the country to have two children who have had successful organ transplants. A heart transplant for Jackie and a kidney transplant for Oscar, and they are doing exceedingly well, very well. This is the first in the country. In fact, the doctor told Anna that she is likely, more than likely, to be the only mother in the country to have two children who have had successful organ transplant. That's a reason to celebrate, and I just wanted to say during this time of the year, during this season, when we're talking about prayer and thankfulness and being grateful.
We're at the top of the hour. We got to run.
And all of the blessings. Thank you.
Thanks, all.
We're at the top of the hour, and it's time to sign off. Thank you for joining us, and to our callers, thank you very, very much. That's the conversation that we want.
Same time. All right. Thanks.
Same time, same place, and thank you very much. I'm Colette Williams signing off.
And Kenny Hedges signing off. Thanks, all.